This is going to be the harder one to talk about because there's like the two sets of lyrics.
Yeah. And I actually went through, I think I put a link in the doc. I went through and I wrote down the lyrics that they're using in the revival, which is a little bit more mixed. It's mostly the movie one, but they have a few interpolated lyrics from the stage version as well.
This is a Media Lab podcast.
Welcome to Putting It Together, the podcast that goes through the entire body of work of Stephen Sondheim, show by show and song by song. My name is Kyle Marshall, your self-described Sondheim expert. Well, we're currently still in our West Side Story Redux mini-season, or mini-series, I suppose, and today we get to kind of deconstruct the song America. This has always been a fascinating song to me just because the difference in lyrics between the stage version and the movie version. And how I really do prefer the movie version of these lyrics. Something that we'll, of course, get into later into the episode with Christine Chen, of course, my co-host for this mini-series. One thing I just wanted to mention before we jump into that conversation is the fact that I was sent, a breakdown of the order of songs as they're going to appear in the new movie version of West Side Story, something that we did not have, when this conversation took place. And so just to kind of like fully bring that out, I just kind of find it fascinating. We've talked already before about how in the stage show versus the movie, they switch where Krupke and Cool happen in the show. They kind of just reverse places. And also Two Hands, One Heart is moved a little bit later into the show as well. So according to my sources, who I have no reason to disbelieve, we are going to be getting, of course, the prologue at the beginning. This new song, I think a new song, called La Borinquena, in brackets, Shark's version. Then we get the Jet song, Something's Coming, the whole dance at the gym sequence, Maria, the balcony scene. We then go into America, G. Officer Krupke. So it's coming in again before Cool does, just like the last movie did. But then we get One Hand, One Heart, then Cool, then the Tonight Quintet, and then the Rumble. So this is where it gets really different, where we're really like compacting that G. Officer Krupke and Cool into like the first act almost. Then we have the Rumble, like I said, I Feel Pretty, Somewhere, A Boy Like That, I Have a Love, Mambo, and then finale. So I am excited to see how that all turns out. I am a huge fan of adaptations and how different creatives decide they want to take a source material and make it their own or update it. So I've been waiting for this movie for like 2.5 years at this point. So I'm grasping at straws, but I mean, I think there's a lot of stuff that's going to be able to be discussed from this movie. I still think it's relevant. I'm a big fan of Steven Spielberg, of course, Tony Kushner, who wrote it. So come on, December, get here already. All right, let's go talk about the song America with Christine Chen. Christine, we're back here again, of course, talking about America here this time. The song America. We do not have enough time to talk about the general concept of America.
Oh, yeah.
So hopefully everything is going okay down there. I am up here, of course, in Canada. You know, last week we talked about kind of history with like West Side Story, that sort of thing. And we started to uncover how like this whole show has social commentary elements very intentionally put into this piece. And you were talking about how like that's somewhat surprising in the show.
Yeah, because I think on the surface, West Side Story is just a love story. And that's supported by the dance style where they're doing ballet. It's very, I think I called it highly stylized before. And it's very much, this isn't a real thing that's happening. It's just the way that we decided to tell this love story, which is ultimately a tragedy. But the thing is that while they're doing this, which is very like with this very like glossy surface and very sort of like a lush score for a lot of the scenes, we're also going to talk about race relations and gang violence and, you know, like immigrant issues while we're doing that. And it's also shown by the ending of West Side Story, where it's changed from Romeo and Juliet and the speech that Maria gives. So it seems like almost that these two things would be at odds, but then it works surprisingly well, where it's, even though it's a love story at its core, it really, I actually think it's more about social issues, or at least that's how I prefer to see the show, because to be honest, the love story just does not interest me that much.
Well, I think you're not entirely wrong. I mean, of course, the love story, I think, gets the more press, I guess, out of this story. But I think for an audience who may have never seen West Side Story, only knows it in passing or just the songs from it, is that I think it's easy to be like, oh, yeah, it's like that, like the show where people dance like ballet dancers and say coolie cool boy and all that kind of stuff, without really wrestling with the fact that, no, like there is a very specific, like you said, race relation plot inside this movie that's kind of at the forefront. None more so than in this song that we're talking about here this week, which does have different lyrics, whether you're talking about the stage version versus the movie version. There are very direct, like, we are criticizing the way that this is being handled in our society right now. And I would say so far, like at least in the movie version, which I think I like the lyrics of better, they don't really pull punches. Like they're very explicit with how what they think.
Yeah, I think this song is really interesting. And this song has also been sort of like covered and remixed a few different times to just sort of talk about the state of America, which has had multiple issues since 1958, or I think that's when the show came out. So
I was taught in school that President Lincoln gave the Emancipation Proclamation and then nothing bad ever happened ever again. I think one thing, this is kind of like a fun story that Sondheim writes a little bit about in the book Finishing the Hat, but he actually goes into a little bit more detail. I was talking about last week how on the special features of West Side Story, at least on the version that I have, Sondheim gives a commentary for all the songs in the show. This was a song without lyrics, but the song was basically written already the way that it is. So Bernstein had this song kind of ready to go, and he tells Sondheim that, you know, I just got back. I went on this vacation to Puerto Rico, and they have this, yeah, a dance rhythm basically called the Huapango. And I was inspired and I wrote this song. I think we should include it in the show. And I just need you to set lyrics to it, and that's great. But it was years and years later, when they were like uncovering some of his old like archive material, that they came across this exact song for an unproduced show called Conch Town. So Bernstein just made up that story completely. He just wanted the show to be in the show. And he thought that by like making up this like innate backstory, that Sondheim would be more willing to be like, okay, sure, let's do it.
Because I am not as familiar with like Latin music styles. I wonder how authentic it actually is to that dance, if it is still based on that dance style.
Yeah, that is way outside my knowledge zone, or outside of my lane. So I don't know. Yeah, it's a good idea, good question to ask, of how closely this actually does resemble that. I think the other thing that we didn't really mention in the first episode, but I think bears mentioning here, even though Sondheim is credited with the lyrics of this show, Bernstein did have a hand in crafting some of the lyrics as well, and basically as a friendly gesture basically allowed Sondheim to get full credit for just the lyrics. Sondheim isn't very explicit with like, this was 100% absolutely me in this song, and then maybe Bernstein did like this stanza here or influence it over here. So I don't know. I think sometimes you can tell which is Sondheim and which isn't him, especially if you contrast this with some of other Bernstein shows out there. But
I don't remember the exact quote, but Sondheim was quoted as saying something like, well, he gave me full credit, which I guess was nice of him, but I prefer that he didn't, because now people think I wrote all these like ridiculously florid and romantic lyrics that I don't want credit for having written.
Which makes me feel like I Feel Pretty is probably one of those songs that maybe he, well, that's not true. He actually does credit that he was trying to be like super poetical in that, but there's some stuff in Even Tonight that is like, right, I'm pretty sure that's probably Bernstein who did that. There is two different versions of this song, and we'll get to the lyrics in a moment, but I guess for you, did you even know, I guess, first of all, that there was two different sets of lyrics here?
I always thought it was the movie version. I think that was the one that I was familiar with. And then when the most recent revival came around, there were rumblings about, oh, like, here are the things that change. Oh, which version are they using? Oh, I think they're using the movie version. Right. And I was like, oh, I guess there's different versions. And so I went and searched up the original version, like a video of it, which I think has been, or there was a video of the 2009 revival, which I think has since been taken off YouTube. But right. But it was interesting because I think Karen Olivo, who plays Anita in that production, has a very particular kind of presence where she can be very assertive. And the way that she plays Anita in this song just comes off as mean. I was like, it was just not necessarily as fun to watch because the poor girl, they're all just heckling her and like making fun of her and being like, when will you just leave? Mm-hmm. And then I listened to the Cheetah Rivera version and it still has a little bit of that, but she sounds a little more catty and a little less actually mean. So, but I do much prefer the version with both the girls and the guys, because I think it's more fun, it's flirty, it's sexy, it's like they have a more interesting dance between them, and it's
more interesting when there is that the back and forth of the confrontation, right, is more interesting,
and they can also add more actual social commentary with gender roles and what the men have been up to versus what the women have been up to and how they view America differently. And it's just so much more interesting that way, I think.
Now, have you read why? Because Sondheim basically wanted to do, quote unquote, like the movie version in the original production, and basically had that written the way it is.
And then
do you know why it wasn't done that way?
Just choreograph a number of solely girls.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Jerome Robbins just wanted to do a dance number with women. That's all he wanted. So Sondheim was like, okay, I'm going to have to try and make this song work, but without the men being there. So he had to kind of rework a bunch of the lyrics and basically bring in this woman character who doesn't really do anything else for the entire show. Like, she doesn't, I mean, she comes back, but it's like, she's not very integral to the plot. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Before we get into the lyrics here, though, I'm going to throw you under the bus here again. Since Maria, because we talked about Maria last time, what has happened in the show up until this point?
So I guess one of the things I didn't mention last time was at the dance at the gym, Bernardo and Riff have agreed to have a war council on like their next fight, just to plan it out.
This sounds so cool. We're going to have a war council.
which is funny teens. Because Anita literally mocks them for it the scene. She's like, oh, you boys and your war council, like, go come back once you're done with your games or whatever. Which is also just funny. But, you know, Tony and Maria have met again on her fire escape, and they have now sung both. Well, Tony has sung Maria and they have both sung together tonight about how much they love each other. She tells him to come back the next day. And meanwhile, before the war council happens, the sharks are mostly just hanging out. This is the movie version, I guess. And Anita, again, is like mocking them for going off to the war council. And they're like, oh, well, when you're in America, this is how you do things. And then they launch into this song. Whereas in the stage version, it's just the woman, Rosalia, who is this new sort of character created for this sole purpose, talks about how lovely, like, you know, their lives in Puerto Rico were. I think the actual impetus for it is she talks about their names and how in Puerto Rico, everyone had such nice names. Anita's just like, well, if you love Puerto Rico so much, like, just why don't you go back? And they also get into another song debating the merits of Puerto Rico versus America, or I guess specifically New York City.
Yeah, I guess that is true. Their version of America is in New York City, which also has its own set of problems and pros and cons and stuff like that, too. I do want to call out the fact that I think I've said this on the podcast before, too. Maybe it's just because she feels like there's character there. Anita is my favorite character in this entire piece. She's so great. There's no wonder why she like Rina Moreno gets the Oscar for this. Chita Rivera is nominated for the Tony. I don't know if she wins the Tony for this, but
I don't think she was. She not was she even nominated? I don't actually.
Oh, maybe
she,
I'm wrong. I thought
Carol
she was,
Lawrence but not.
Oh, you might be right.
Because I think Carol Lawrence was also nominated for supporting, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, it's the Tony nominations for this show are kind of weird.
Yeah, it's been weird every time. But Karen Olivo did win.
Karen Olivo won for Anita. Yeah. Highly sought after role.
There's always this discussion about how Anita like just runs away with the show, like, and Maria is such a non-entity as far as most of the show goes, that Anita is the main, she's the main character that actually feels interesting to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe there's that little bit of danger to her. She's like aggressively protective of Maria. And you know, there's more to her. I guess there's just more for you to use as an actor to do stuff.
I think it's also more like Maria is a bit of a blank slate. So it really depends what the actor is bringing to her. And most of the time that's just like wide-eyed, like innocence and that sort of look. But I do think there have been probably some other versions of Maria, but Anita is always just like, I mean, it's also sort of a trope now where it's the fiery Latino woman and
right,
like, you know, that sort of thing. But at the same time, you see her caring for her family. You see her grieving after, spoiler alert, Bernardo dies. And you see her sort of still helping Maria with I Have a Love, and then up to when she tells Tony that Maria's dead. Like you see more of an evolution with Anita, and it's more explicitly on screen. Whereas with Maria, she does have an evolution to get her to that final scene, but it doesn't happen on screen. Like you can't really tell that it's happening, and it's really not given stage time for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those classic things, right, about any type of visual medium where showing, not telling, is sometimes a little bit more respected. Because, I mean, you can say, every character can be like, oh, you know, like Maria's or Tony's so great as a leader and blah, blah, blah. But if you never actually show him being a good leader, then it's like, what are these people talking about?
And also, especially in theater, I feel like there's a lot of like unreliable narrators and stuff. It's like, okay, true. Well, this is coming from the gang. Like, of course, they're going to say he's a great leader because otherwise he wouldn't be the leader. And
right, yeah. Self-fulfilling prophecy, yeah.
So, yeah, it does have to kind of like be shown in some sort of way. But yeah, I think Anita's just, I don't actually know if the stage time has been calculated, but I feel like she might actually be on stage more than Maria is.
It definitely feels that way. Like, again, I have not done the actual breakdown, but it feels that way. Because I feel, I mentioned this too, like she shows up at the dance, obviously. She gets the Tonight duet. And then we basically, I'm going to just double check this.
Like,
we basically don't see her again until the quintet.
Oh, yeah.
And then she thinks I Feel Pretty at the start of act two. So like she's given really nothing to do in the first half of the show.
She's literally just like sitting at home twiddling her fingers during this entire time.
I know we keep referencing the movie that we have not seen, but this new movie coming out, I'm wondering if Tony Kushner is going to do something with that, at least give some book scenes to her arriving, having a relationship with the rest of the women, like something to give her a character.
Someone had mentioned there was a virtual Q&A with Tony, or I think it might have just been him presenting or something. And he said he wrote lengthy biographies of every character so that actors could use them to dive deeper with the characters. And then with Rachel Zegler, who is playing Maria, and David Alvarez, who's playing Bernardo, they brought up things like, where did our parents come from? And you can see like parts of that brother-sister relationship they have in the movie, apparently. Which is also interesting because I feel like you barely know that they're siblings in the show until Bernardo dies, really.
Well, not only that, I mean, something you just brought up, which is, again, as I get older and things were, I'm becoming more and more aware of like things I just take for granted as I was growing up, most everything was made for me a middle class white guy. It's such a writer thing. It's like, well, they're from Puerto Rico, so they're going to be they like Puerto Rican things. But it's like, well, what region of Puerto Rico were they from? Like, were they rich or were they poor even over there? Like, that's all going to inform your character a little bit, and it's going to inform how you see the world as you're coming over here.
I think one of the things that hasn't been touched on very much is how long they've been in America or in New York. But because it seems like Bernardo and the other sharks have been there for probably a bit longer than the woman have, like maybe they moved there first and then like sent money over or whatever.
Yeah, because definitely for Marie, she is just arriving like that. Yeah, she's like coming here for the first time
as a woman in America, like I need to get this dance and not wear white.
Right.
So, there's a lot of backstory there where that is probably going to be explored in the movie. I'm not sure how long this movie is. I was thinking like 3 hours at least, but
oh, it's gonna have to. Well, I guess it also depends on like what songs are they going to cut songs. The other thing that I'm actually the most curious about is song placement,
right?
Because very famously, right, Sondheim during the Broadway run of this show was like, I don't like the placement of Kuhl and Krupke in this show. They should be flipped. Mm-hmm. They should be showing off how cool they are. Or sorry, they should be making fun of Officer Krupke when you are kind of first introduced to him, and then using that Kuhl right after the murder to try and literally cool themselves down, because that's logically makes sense. Mm-hmm. And then they flip them. But that's not how it is in the stage show. They do Krupke after they do the killing, and Kuhl is earlier in the show. So they do flip them for the movie, and sometimes says it doesn't work as well. Doesn't work. There's a logical truth versus a theatrical truth, and sometimes that theatrical truth is better than what logically would make more sense. Mm. Although I don't know. I actually don't know if I agree with them in that case.
The movie flows pretty well in that, though, because it is sort of like after this murder happens, like, what's the next step? Do we continue fighting with them when the last fight actually ended in two people dead, which is something that we had not planned for, even though we talked up a lot of talk around it. And the police are out there looking for them. Like, I feel like it does make a lot more sense for Kuhl to be in that position. But yeah, with like Officer Krupke, when they're just playing around with him, and like it does seem like I could see that being a thing, a way they're like sort of distracting themselves, but it like doesn't make sense from depending on how you play it, I guess. If Krupke is actually there, it doesn't make sense from Krupke's point of view, where if he's on the hunt looking for these guys who have just murdered two people. But it could also just be like a complete fantasy anyway. So it really depends, I think.
Yeah, it really depends. Like, I mean, again, I have never seen a stage production of this to see like that flipping. So maybe I'm just so used to it in the movie of how they're placed. It's like, of course, that's how it's always been. I guess for me, like specifically the Krupke number, because it is so comedic. Mm-hmm. If you're going to do that after the murder, I just don't know if I necessarily buy them being so intentionally comedic. I almost want them to be playing it like they're trying to cheer themselves up by being funny. Which is like there's a lot of layers to that.
In the 2020 revival version, they keep the stage placement of the songs.
Yeah.
But the way that they do Krupke is out of anger, because they're mad that the system has failed them, essentially. So they're it's more of a dark satire rather than a comedy number then. And they actually cut out the last two, like Krupp you at the end, because which I think is a good move for that sort of tone. Yeah. And it is just very, they're angry because everything is out of their control, which is, again, one of the things that I liked about this revival, because it truly shows like what state of mind that these gangs were in, where like, you know, one of their own has just been killed. They're maybe fearing for their own safety. They don't know where they stand with the sharks now, because both of them have lost a primary figure of their gang, and the police is still out for them. And so, and they're like, well, it's not our fault that things have ended up this way. It's, you know, the institution, it's whatever. Like, and that's also echoed later when they talk to Doc. Doc says something like, you make this world crummy. And he was like, oh, well, that's how we found it. And so I think if they are keeping that placement, and especially for a movie like this, which looks slightly less stylized than the original movie and maybe a little more grounded in the social issues, I think that could be the way that they take that.
I'm also interested too to know if they're going to update the language. Like, they could still use some of those colloquialisms that the show's always had. But I mean, again, famously, Sondheim wanted it to be "Gee, Officer Krupke, fuck you." Right. So I mean, they could get away with that now if they really wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it should be interesting. I feel like they might not change the lyrics in the songs, but they would change how they talk to each other in the rest of the script. But as far as placement of songs, again, from this like discussion that I mentioned earlier, Kushner apparently liked "I Feel Pretty" at the top of Act Two a lot rather than before the Rumble because he likes that irony. So "I Feel Pretty" will probably be after the Rumble. And he did mention that he grew up with the original cast album and didn't see the film until college. So he'd gone back to the original stage version. So possibly Kuhl and Krupke will be in the original placements of it.
So many questions. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned last time too about how, I mean, every show is a little bit different, but like the act break is oftentimes very intentionally used in a theatrical moment, right? It's like we have like a great, say, end of act one. Okay, you get to go away for 15 minutes and we're going to come back. And then the opening song of act two is introducing you back into the world and, and something else, or can be used that way, which is sometimes why I feel that you need to cut one or the other in movie adaptations because there is no hard break for us to go away. We have to redo this a little bit, which is why I'm always so open for there to be adaptation and songs to be cut or modified or moved around. I have no problem with that happening. I'm not so beholden to the text. Like, it has to be exactly the way it was written for the stage.
Or honestly, just put an intermission in a movie too. Like,
I mean, you know, I'm pushing for that so much, as every movie now needs to be like 3 hours long, apparently. I'm like, I need to get up. I've been sitting too long.
I think My Fair Lady, I want to say, had one. I want to say Sound of Music had one.
Oh, yeah.
But I was actually kind of surprised that West Side Story didn't, but the way that they reorganized it, I think, makes sense for it to just keep going. Like, Marvel, if you're gonna keep making 3 hour long movies, like, you know, I watched Endgame like 6 months after it came out, and there's this like one scene with Thor and his mother where half the theater left to go use the bathroom during that one scene.
Oh, yeah.
And then I was like, oh, I guess this is the one that no one cares about. So
so true. I mean, I am now of an age where it's like, if it's anything longer than 2 hours, it's like, oh, I'm going to, I can't drink water for 2 hours before this move, or else I'm going to have to go pee. Just breaking into the conversation here to thank some of the people and companies that helped this show continue to go. As I say at the beginning of every ad break section, if you'd like to help support this show for absolutely free, you can give a rating and review on whatever app you listen to podcasts in, which is greatly appreciated. And if you'd like to help monetarily, which will only help to grow and make this show better, you can do so over at our Patreon page. Please do not donate if it impacts you negatively financially. I also, of course, need to give a huge thank you to the God That's Good tier from Patreon, the triumphant quartet of Jack, Todd, Carrie, Witty, and Louise. Putting Together is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported. The Alberta Podcast Network promotes and supports Alberta-made podcasts and connects their audiences with Alberta-based businesses and organizations. This week, we're brought to you by ATB Cares. With ATB Cares, giving is easy. Donate through ATB Cares, and ATB will match 20% of every dollar donated to eligible Albertan charities, maximizing the impact of your donation. You can visit atbcares.com to choose your cause and donate today. This week, we're also brought to you by the Alberta Podcast Network. So let's go and listen to one of our other great shows. Hi, my name is Kyle.
I'm Dave.
And I'm The Machine.
And we do a podcast called Kyle and Dave versus The Machine. It's a podcast where a sentient machine is forcing us to watch movies in order to prevent it from initiating the apocalypse. Although, Dave, you and I tend to talk about the ideas of the movie rather than the movie itself.
Well, it's the machine's fault, like everything, and then by effect your fault, Kyle, that you've invited me, and this is the only thing I like to talk about.
I mean, I'm not going to face the apocalypse alone, so you seem like a good patsy to bring along with me.
If you wanted somebody that was going to give you some hope, you picked the wrong person.
Kyle and Dave vs. the Machine is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported. New episodes are out every Friday. All right, well, let's get into the lyrics here then of Americas. I'm just going to go through the lyrics of the stage version first. We'll break them up in half here again. So, of course, we have this Rosalia character who is the one who is being a little bit homesick, wants to go back to Puerto Rico. And Anita is not. She does not want to go back. But so Rosalia says, Puerto Rico, you lovely island, island of tropical breezes, always the pineapples growing, always the coffee blossoms blowing. And then Anita responds, Puerto Rico, you ugly island, island of tropic diseases, always the hurricanes blowing, always the population growing, and the money owing, and the babies crying, and the bullets flying. I like the island Manhattan, smoke on your pipe and put that in. And then Anita and the girls go in, I like to be in America, okay by me in America, everything free in America, for a small fee in America.
So in your original episode on this, you talked about how, well, two things I remember vividly are how Sondheim always does like one more in a list than you expect with the always the hurricanes blowing, always the population growing and the money owing and the babies crying and the bullets flying. Like there's just a little more to that list. But then the other thing that I thought was interesting, because I had always wondered about this line, was smoke on your pipe and put that in. Is presumably because they're still immigrants who don't have a complete grasp of the English language yet.
Correct.
And so it's sort of there when they mess up phrases and colloquialisms, because I was always like, what does that even mean? And so that actually made a lot of sense when you had mentioned that.
And then the fact that he's rhyming, put that in with Manhattan, like, I mean, that's kind of fun.
I actually think that's a pretty good rhyme. The other thing that I found out was when Rita Moreno got this role for the movie, she and other people had mentioned it before with the Puerto Rico, you ugly island, island of tropic diseases. She was like, I can't say that. There's no way I'm going to be able to say that. And like have my family see that. So she was actually relieved that for the movie, they like she actually went to go talk to Sondheim or something, I think. And he had already been like, oh, we're going to be changing that. And she was like, oh, thank God. So
it is pretty like bold to do that, right? Like that is somewhere you were coming from. Just be so plainly like you ugly island, right?
It is very blunt. I mean, I do like the, I don't know if this is technically wordplay, but like tropical breezes versus tropic diseases. Like, I think that's a nice, like a literal turn of phrase. But when she says you ugly island, it does sort of, I guess, set up Anita's character pretty well, because ugly is such a, like, it's like a stopper of a word. It doesn't flow into the other words around it, as opposed to lovely, which does sort of like keep a certain flow to it. And so it I guess does set up Anita's portion really well, but at the same time, it's just not, it's a little bit of a jolt to hear when it's in a song. again, I do like the film version better, but
yeah, I do like how like what Rosalia sings and what Anita sings are rhyming themselves. Mm-hmm. Like you pointed out, like tropical breezes, tropic diseases, pineapples growing, hurricanes blowing, mm-hmm. coffee blossom blowing, and population growing. Each person is rhyming their stanzas together, but they're also rhyming with each other, which I think is a really fascinating little puzzle piece that Sondheim is doing here.
I also actually like, I think you can tell that this was not the original lyrics Sondheim wanted, because there are moments of this song, like when she says, "I like to be in America, okay by me in America, everything free in America, for a small fee in America." And it works better when it's the girl saying, the response, "Oh, America's great." And then they're the ones with a dose of reality being like, "For a small fee in America," because
right.
It doesn't quite fit as much when they're like, everything's free, but okay, yeah, there is a small fee. You know, that's
You want that undercut, right? It's like, I'm making a statement and the other people are making the joke about it, right?
Yeah, so it is, and that happens like a couple times in this stage version too, I think.
Just to go through that stage version, so this is kind of the back and forth that Rosalia and Anita have. Rosalia starts, "I like the city of San Juan. I know a boat you can get on. Hundreds of flowers in full bloom. Hundreds of people in each room. Automobiles in America. Chromium steel in America. Wire spoke wheel in America. Very big deal in America. I'll drive a Buick through San Juan. If there's a road you can drive on, I'll give my cousins a free ride. How you get all of them inside. Immigrant goes to America. Many hellos in America. Nobody knows in America. Puerto Rico's in America.
I like the city of San Juan. I know a boat you can get on. Hundreds of flowers in full bloom.
Hundreds of people in each room.
Automobile in America. Chromium steel in America. Wire spoke wheel in America. Very big deal in America.
If there's a road you can drive on,
I'll give my cousins a free ride.
How you get all of them inside?
Immigrant goes to America. Many hellos in America. Nobody knows in America. Puerto Rico's in America.
The part of me that is feels weird about this, And maybe this is, you know, too much extraneous guilt, but I think that some of these lyrics are so cutting and interesting. And yet I have to acknowledge the fact that as like the three main creators of this are all white men. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There is this weird like prism that they're using racial caricatures themselves to write this song.
Right. We sort of talked about this for Pacific Overtures as well. And in every episode, I think you had talked about that with whoever was on as your guest for that show. But I think this is slightly different because it, first of all, wasn't originally conceived as a Puerto Rican white race relations show. It was a white on white show. So it sort of like makes you wonder how much research or did they actually do for this particular show? As far as how these people felt, how like their prospects, why they would come to America. Of course, like it helps that I guess they were doing it at the time that it's set in. It was a contemporary show. So any possible issues were probably more forefront, but again, filtered through what was likely a white media. You know, I'd say they're all fairly intelligent men. They could like observe the issues happening around them. So it is like, you know, not ideal, but
but it's one of those things too, like for me, like I guess where I'm coming from here a little bit is it's like sometimes the people get like not famous but have the most clout, let's say, on like social media, whether it's Twitter, Instagram, whatever. Like sometimes they can say the right things, but not actually like do the right things, if you know what I mean. So I'm not so convinced that that's what's going on here, but they know how to be very cutting here. Cause I think the best line or one of the best lines here in the stage version is what we just ended off with, which is like, nobody knows in America, Puerto Rico's in America, which is like still true in 2021, I feel, in many ways.
With the most recent hurricane and stuff that happened. Mm-hmm. But that's another one of those lines that doesn't seem to fit for Anita and the rest of the girls saying
right.
it. Like, and it's so interesting because this wasn't even a line that was repurposed. Because the other one, For a Small Fee, is in that original script with the men. But this one is completely new. So it's, I wonder what he was thinking when he wrote it. Because it is true and it's a really powerful line, but it just doesn't fit with the characters saying it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think you could see the, probably the frustration on Sondheim's part of having to make this fit with characters he didn't want to write the songs for. And like how he writes, right? He writes it with a very specific character's voice in mind. Mm-hmm. And so he's really trying to make this all work. How about all this car culture? It seems like they're really obsessed with cars in this song.
Yeah, I don't know. When was the 50s, 60s? Like,
yeah, I mean, I get it. Like, 50s is probably peak car culture in a way. 50s, 60s.
And also, I guess, like, presumably at that point, cars hadn't become a super big commodity in Puerto Rico, so it's probably just like, well, look at all these cars, like, and especially in a city like New York City where it's always just, you know, industrialized and all that, it's probably fairly different than what they were used to, you know, when people talk about like, oh, New York City, that the Jay-Z song Concrete Jungle Where Dreams Are Made Of,
right,
and stuff, it's right. Like, it, that term itself seems to be at odds with each other, because it's like, oh, New York City, it's all just like concrete and steel now. But at the same time, people are like, oh, this is the most beautiful city in the world or something. It's like,
right, okay. Right. So,
where the like industrialization of something becomes the appeal of it. And I think that's what's going on here. But it is, I just, my favorite part about theater is how you don't have to pay for product placement in shows and stuff, because, you know, movies, you're not allowed to use actual brands unless it's
you
approved.
Pay for it, yeah.
And like in theater they just throw whatever they want around. it just amuses me every time.
So the song ends here with Rosalia starting,
I think there's actually an error in the Finishing the Hat book where
I think we mentioned that, yeah
it should be I'll Bring a TV in that verse and those two are switched.
I think you're right. I think I forgot to write this down this time, but you're right. I think that those are all flipped. So in the book, this is how it goes. I'll give them a new washing machine and what have they got there to keep clean? I like the shores of America. Comfort is yours in America. Knobs on the doors in America. Wall-to-wall floors in America. I'll bring a TV to San Juan. If there's a current to turn on, everyone there will give big cheer. Everyone there will have moved here.
What have they got there to keep clean? Oh, I like the shores of America. Comfort is yours in America. Knobs on the doors in America. Wall to wall floors in America.
I just like, that's such a great put down. It's like, well, like, if you don't like it so much, shut up and get going.
Also, like, when I'm like, she's so mean. Like, and
yeah,
also
I know.
I mean, I guess it's maybe choreographed differently each production, but it's literally all these girls and Anita against this one girl. And I don't,
right.
I don't really know why they didn't have it be like half and half, because I feel like there's got to be more than one girl who is also missing Puerto Rico. And that would make it sting less, I feel, if it wasn't just every one of them picking on this poor girl who, you know, just liked her way of life before.
I guess overall, then, some of the stage revivals have used this. The most recent one, the 2020 version, kind of a half and half thing where some of the lyrics are stage version, some of them are the film version. Yeah. How does it work for you overall?
It's fine. It works. Like, you know, I do much prefer the movie version. I don't mind them taking some of the lyrics from the stage version because, like, you know, like the Puerto Rico line and stuff. But I think it just works a lot better when there's two factions that you can, first of all, it's not like all verse one. There's two sort of equal factions, but also like you can understand why they are coming from the position that they come from. But I do think, like, I mean, I don't know what the Jerome Robbins choreography for this all female dance scene was, but it must have been something amazing. Otherwise, I would have been. They should have just gone with the other one.
Just a lot of high kicks and dress flips and like, stuff like that.
I don't really know. Like, I feel like it would still just be more interesting to choreograph for two different genders anyway. Like, I don't know what he had envisioned there. Yeah, I mean, I think it also shows Anita as, like, because we know Bernardo is the leader of the Sharks, and we know Riff and kind of Tony is the leader of the Jets, but this, when it's all girls, it does show like Anita is also the leader of
the women.
And it's like, I mean, it's also sort of, I guess, another lost opportunity to do something there if they wanted to flesh it out. Like, is she the leader because Bernardo's the leader and she's dating him, or is she like the leader in her own right? Where, like, if you, I guess, look at this song, like, she seems like a take no prisoners sort of type. So it's like, okay, yeah, I definitely believe that she has earned this position all on her own.
To that point, I realize now that I did not credit the performers we're talking about here. So just to double back on that, from the original Broadway cast, we have Chita Rivera and Marilyn Cooper. From the movie, it's Rita Moreno and George Chakiris. Revival of 2009 is Karen Olivo and Jennifer Sanchez. And then in 2020, we have Yesenia Ayala and Amar Ramasar, think.
Who, he had his own problematic turn, but
yes. We'll get into that here. For the film version, though, which I think is filmed quite beautifully, even with that like freeze frame at the end, let me just go through these lyrics here. Anita starts off in this one where it's Puerto Rico, my heart's devotion, let it sink back in the ocean. Always the hurricanes blowing, always the population growing. And the money owing, and the sunlight streaming, and the natives steaming. I like the island Manhattan. Smoke on your pipe and put that in. And the girls come in and say, I like to be in America. Okay by me in America. Everything free in America. And then the Bernardo says, for a small fee in America. And then Anita goes, buying on credit is so nice. One look at us and they charge twice. I'll have my own washing machine. What will you have, though, to keep clean?
Always the hurricanes blowing, always the population growing, and the money owing, and the sunlight streaming, and the natives steaming. I like the island Manhattan.
I know you do.
Smoke on your pipe and put that in.
A small fee in America.
Okay. Buying on credit is so nice.
One look at us and they charge twice.
I have my own washing machine.
What will you have though to keep clean?
Skyscrapers bloom in America.
It just, like, because again, we don't really know about how they came to America, but presumably the men have been here before. They've been working, they've been fighting with the gangs, they've sort of established their own type of presence here, and it's completely different than the women who all, like, I guess, work together at this dress shop, it seems like. And still, like, it, they're it's work, but they seem like they're still able to, you know, joke around and talk to each other and hang out. Whereas the men presumably are doing more like waiting tables and shining shoes and that kind of thing, where it's a little more backbreaking. Yeah. And so they've had more of a dose of reality, I guess you could say. Whereas the women are still kind of just like doing domestic work and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that that's easy if you're, because of the gender roles of the day, if you are at home all day, yes, being at home in America was better than being at home in Puerto Rico at the time. But as far as like working and interacting with like the general population, like the men are going to be getting the brunt of racism, looked down upon and treated unequally, right? So you can see where their different perspectives are lying.
Yeah. And also the other thing is, I wonder, and I didn't have a chance to look this up very much, but I do wonder about the gender roles back in Puerto Rico, where if when they come to America and, you know, Maria was like, oh, it's my first night as like an American woman, like just what the, if they were more confining before, where now like that they're in America, Anita can say things like, oh, everything's free in America, like I can be whoever I want to be, essentially. And so it sort of makes you wonder, like, what was Puerto Rico like as a woman in the 50s,
right,
where maybe she didn't have those opportunities? Or is it just because, well, no, I was going to say, is it just because they're no longer with like their family, but their parents are there, they're just not on screen any of the time.
Yeah, you don't see them.
So it's not that, but yeah, it's just like something must be different about America and how America treats women, I think, to have them have this sort of optimism about their life in America.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't think that the show necessarily explores much of that past a surface level. But the subtext is like the opportunities feel like so endless over here in America, and there's no opportunity where I'm currently at. And so they're internalizing that, whereas I think maybe the men are being like, well, at the very least, I was a somebody over there, and here I'm breaking my back and I'm still a nobody.
Yeah. Yeah. And even Bernardo, who is the leader of the gang of Puerto Ricans, he's still just like, there's not really anything for me to do here besides, you know, like everybody is going to pick on us. Everybody sees us and they see that we're different from them. And they treat us differently because, you know, the workforce is probably pretty competitive at that point.
So they continue doing their back and forth here with Anita going, skyscrapers bloom in America, Cadillacs zoom in America, industry boom in America, 12 in a room in America, lots of new housing with more space, lots of doors slamming in our face, I'll get a terrace apartment, better get rid of your accent. Life can be bright in America if you can fight in America. Life is all right in America if you're all white in America. Here you are free and you have pride, as long as you stay on your own side. Free to be anything you choose, free to wait tables and shine shoes. Everywhere grime in America, organized crime in America, terrible time in America. You forget I'm in America. I think I go back to San Juan. I know a boat you can get on. Everyone there will give big cheer. Everyone there will have moved here.
Have though to keep clean.
Skyscrapers bloom in America. Cadillacs zoom in America. Industry boom in America.
12 in a room in America.
Lots of new housing with more space.
Lots of doors slamming in our face.
I'll get a terrace apartment.
Better get rid of your accent.
Life can be bright in America
if you can fight in America.
Life is all right in America
if you're all white in America.
La 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 la.
where you are free and you have pride.
Long as you stay on your own side.
Free to be anything you choose.
Free to wear devils and shine shoes.
Everywhere crime in America, organized crime in America, terrible time in America.
You forget I'm in America.
I go back to San Juan.
I know a boat you can get on. Bye-bye.
Everyone there will give big cheer.
Hey! Everyone there will have moved here.
It's just like Bernardo is very jaded. I actually find it funny how he mentions organized crime in America because he's like,
yeah.
Problem.
Part of a gang.
Yeah. And just like what they've been going through. Like, I also just like life is all right in America if you're all white in America, which.
Yeah, it's the best line.
That's the one that was replaced by the Puerto Rico line. And I'm like, I want them both, though. So, yeah, like the American dream, like America really did some great marketing after World War II, I guess, of, like, you know, the American dream, like we're the best country, we can win anything. You know, we joined the war, now it's over. Yeah.
They put a large marketing budget in place. They made sure their SEO is all up to date.
Their PR agent is, you know, breaking it in. And so you come to America where, again, with, I think, like the gender roles in particular must have been stricter in Puerto Rico, probably like more traditional family values. And here it's like Anita, when she says, I'll get a terrace apartment, like maybe she was never able to own property before or like to have something of her own. And of course, Bernardo's like, yeah, we tried that. You cannot with your accent. You know, it's like they're there to give that reality check of, no, people treat us here differently. But also there was one thing that Rita Moreno mentioned as well for the movie and how they, you know, did brownface for the movie. And she said she had tried telling them, no, but like Hispanics or Latinos, I guess, more to be more precise, are not all brown necessarily. Like there are white passing Latinos and there are darker Latinos. And then so it's not like everybody is brown. And so I think that like better get rid of your accent is particularly indicative of that, where like even if you look white, once you start speaking to them, they'll know you're not one of them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things that you really can't hide, right? Even if you are white passing, then there's this other thing that's going to hold you back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm just a big fan of America. I'm curious to see which version goes into the new movie. I'm assuming they're going to keep the movie version, but I don't know. I actually don't know.
It does seem, again, this is from that Tony Kushner discussion, which, by the way, is in our document. I pasted it at the end if you haven't seen it.
Oh, perfect.
In terms of America, the new version will be a hybrid of the 1957 lyrics, primary Rosalia's part in the introduction of the song, and some lines not used in the 1961 film, like Nobody Knows in America, Puerto Rico is in America, and the 1961 lyrics with the argument between the men versus the women. And you can kind of see that in the trailer where you have the men singing opposite the woman. So it looks like it will be the original intro maybe, and then the men versus woman. And then I also, I guess, want to mention the 2020 revival, which we don't have to go through all the lyrics, but there are some, like, I'd say notable changes. It's also a combination of both the stage and movie, but it's staged like the movie where it's both genders.
Yeah, I'm reading through them right now. Like, there's, yeah, it's kind of an amalgamation and like a simplification of what we've already read here.
Yeah. I think one of the interesting ones, though, was for the Everywhere Grime in America. They actually did, I think, Garbage in Grime in America, Organized Crime in America. Yeah. And then he says, why waste my time in America? And Anita says, you forget I'm in America, which I think is a better lead up to that line rather than terrible time in America. Because he's like, I'm spending all my time here. There's organized crime. There's, I can't do anything but wait tables and shine shoes. But Anita's like, no, but I'm here and I'm staying. So you better figure out your priorities.
And I'm assuming too, like, I guess I don't know this for sure, but as far as I understand it, if there is any lyric changes like this, like Sondheim has to approve this or he wrote it himself.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're not just going to be like, I'm going to make a decision to change these lyrics to this song.
Whenever shows are licensed, they're pretty strict on that. And that's why they have like specific school versions of shows rather than schools being allowed to just redact whatever they want to.
Yeah, right.
Funny story. My high school did Avenue Q and the school edition for Avenue Q is quite a trip.
That's wild. Like, how do you even do that in a school setting?
Also, they just straight
up cut 20 minutes long.
And... yeah. And instead of the internet is for porn, they had My Social Life is Online. And they did
Social
media. But yeah, they straight up cut like two of the songs, I think. And it was still raunchy, like, but it was like a PG-13 light.
Right.
Like, somewhere
between
PG and PG-13, I'd say.
And that entire video is available online somewhere, I'm sure. So I asked this at the end of last episode too, but I guess when you're looking at this song, I guess it's hard because there is two different versions, but is this top five, middle five, bottom five for you in this show?
I'd say this is probably top five. Again, like I love the movie version so much. Just the way that it's staged, the way that it has that underlying social commentary that you can dig into it and see more about like what the characters are saying. And even just like having that dance number between the men and women. I don't know that this is the most, like as far as placement of this song goes, it could kind of honestly go anywhere in the first half. Like, it's not really... It does add to the show, so I don't want to say it's like a useless song, but it's not really like part of the story of the show.
Yeah, that is true. Like, if you were looking at songs that you could potentially cut to save, like, quote-unquote, the narrative, you could easily cut this song out without losing anything, but that social commentary thing gets a little bit diluted.
Yeah, so it's and also just like the relationship between Bernardo and Anita, which I actually think is slightly more fleshed out than the relationship between Marie and Tony, which kind of makes sense. They've only known each other 24 hours. But yeah, it's like this can really be anywhere before the rumble happens. It's kind of like a standalone thing. I guess the other thing I wanted to mention when I was talking about gender roles, because the lead up to this in the movie is Anita mocking him for going to this war council. She's like, oh, you boys play with your little war council and then you come back and like, you know, I'll take care of you or whatever. And so it's like the gang violence and this like organized crime that Bernardo mentions and all this, like they seem like petty games to the woman, which I guess on one hand you could say they're not taking it seriously and because they don't understand what life is like in America where you have to like defend your turf so desperately. But at the same time, you could also say, oh, maybe it's just because the women are more mature and know how to maybe approach problems or like to not approach certain problems instead of
by
like,
fighting all the time.
Yeah, exactly. And so I guess like that can also be a way where it's just, And again, it, I guess, makes it even more shocking for Anita when Bernardo dies, because she's like, oh, well, this was just some stupid playground fight, like, is what she thought. It really does, I guess, reveal a lot about Anita and Bernardo and the state of how they see things in America.
Plus, it's you get to see a lot of fluffy dresses.
Yeah.
So I like it just for that purpose itself. I also like this that much, too. I think this would be easily top five or top six, somewhere in there. I've never done an actually official rating of these songs.
Right, yeah. All of a sudden, you're shoving everything into top five. And
I know. Honestly, when I was first workshopping the podcast, there was a part of me was like, should I do that? Like, rank every song at the end of every episode and have like the master song time list? But I was like, nah, it's too difficult to try and do that.
I tried to do that once with like all the musicals I've seen, to just like rank them, where I'd go down the line and I'd be like, is this better or worse? And then like, that's how I'd rank them.
Yeah,
It's just so tough because, you know, there's some where it's like, oh, the book or the music is really good, but the book is trash. But then, like, you know, I still really love seeing it. But then there's the ones where it's like both. It's
too. That's the thing with Reddit. I come across this all the time, which is that for Sondheim shows, like, rank all the 18 Stephen Sondheim shows. And I always have to ask, like, are you asking me as far as like the music from it or the actual show? Because those are two different questions.
Yeah.
Because there's some shows I love the music, but the book is absolute garbage. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not good. So.
Yeah.
we'll figure it out. We'll come together and unite as one America at some point. Christine, if people wanted to find out more about you online, how can they do so?
Yeah. You can follow me on Twitter at Across the Arch, where I mostly just post about theater, really. And I do also have another podcast talking about more current Broadway shows with my friend called Bottomless Broadway. So feel free to look that up on any other podcast player you use, or you can also follow us online at Bottomless B-Way on Instagram or Twitter.
Cool. Perfect. Next week, we're going to be getting into the Tonight Quintet. So we'll basically spend the entire episode talking over top of each other. It's going to be great.
Oh, yeah. And then we'll go to intermission or something.
That's right. Once again, thank you for listening. You can send emails to puttingittogetherpodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow Sondheim Podcast on Twitter and Instagram, and you can support the show on Patreon by going to patreon.com/puttingittogetherpodcast. Thank you to the Alberta Podcast Network and to ATB this week. Putting It Together is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and pretty much anywhere you can get podcasts from. Consider subscribing so that you never miss an episode. Next week, the Tonight Quintet is here. I'll just be putting on my socks. As always, a big thank you to the great Chris Taniguchi, who designed the podcast artwork, and to Nick Driscoll for composing our theme music. Well, we've reached the end of our episode. Yes, I know. Goodbye for now.